70 record closing highs so far for the Dow.
Blasting through a ceiling.
In a record-setting IPO.
Investors who have been riding the wave.
When the stock market is booming, we're made to believe the economy is booming.
As the stock market goes, so goes the wealth and the health and economy.
So what exactly is the stock market measuring?
Capital FM. Today is 19th of March, and you know what happens every Tuesday. This is the Financial Forecast, the show that seeks to delve into matters affecting our economy. You are listening to us, 98.4 Capital FM. You can catch us online, and you can use www.capitalfm.co.ke/listenlive, and we value your comments and your feedback. Get us online at X, Capital FM Kenya, hashtag Financial Forecast. And you're with me, Nyambura Ndongo, alongside Ken Gishinga, Chief Economist, Mentoria Economics. We do have a guest with us today, so we shall be letting you in on that. Now, in a world where information is power, I keep telling you, start your week by being ahead of this curve in this game. So you can get a preview of the State of the Economy report by emailing info@mentoria.co.ke, and you can reach out to the same email, info@mentoria.co.ke, to get all your economic insights, data analysis, and forecast. And today we have a really, really good show, and we are looking forward to unpacking something that is absolutely at the heart of what is happening within our economy. Ken, good evening. How are you?
Good evening, Nyambura. It's always a pleasure to see you. Mm-hmm. Financial Forecast, and I'm looking forward to a very, very interesting session where we shall be dissecting this word called the bottom-up economic model.
Yeah.
It's on everybody's lips, but what is really it about? And we have a special guest.
And I know we talked about it last week when we looked at the U.S. economy, and the president was also chest thumping, saying, you know, us guys have done the bottom up, middle out. And we also had the two sessions, China, and we delved into, you said that was the real bottom up. So why not look into the real bottom up when we are here? And well, for us today, there's some news that was given to us today.
Wewe ambaye uko nafasi ya uwezo, usiwe mchoyo ukasema inakuhusu nini ati wewe uchangie tuweze kumlipia yule ambaye hana uwezo. Kuna mahali inakuhusu kwa sababu utasimama mbele ya Mungu siku moja. Utaambiwa wewe ulikuwa na uwezo ya kucontribute 2.7% ulikataa, yule ambaye alikuwa mgonjwa hakusaidika, wewe utaenda jehanamu. Mimi nimewapatia warning mapema, sasa mujipange kutoka hapo.
Ken, tumepatiwa warning at this particular point. Please do introduce our guest with us today.
Well, today we have the pleasure of having Eric Musau. Eric has 19 years in the financial services industry with years experience in investment banking. He has been involved in diverse coverage as an analyst producing research reports for various sectors as well as capital market transactions, including independent financial advisory, rights issues, offer for shares, private placements, and IPOs. His current role is Executive Director, Research and Sustainable Finance at SIB. Karibu sana, Eric.
Yes. Asante sana.
Welcome, Eric.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Nyambura.
Yes.
Yeah.
Looking forward to us understanding why we are being given conditions and threats. We really do not have to take what a job. Later, just keep listening to us, and we shall get to see what all this bottom-up approach is. But you know, as we normally do with the show, we have to start with a little bit of background, what is happening within the world. And Ken, I think for the major economies, one thing I really did notice, and what is one of the key headlines, is the Bank of Japan has scrapped its negative interest rate policy in a monumental decision. And I remember us having this conversation, and before that we were in the van somewhere, and you were explaining what a negative interest rate is. Now Japan has raised the interest rate, very minimal. So I think you'll begin by telling us what is a negative interest rate, and then what did they do, and what does that even, what does that decision do for their economy? What does it mean?
Absolutely, Nyambura. Japan, for the first time in 17 years, have raised interest rates. Japan is a very unique country. It's the only country in the world that has been maintaining negative interest rates. And as the phrase suggests, it's reverse interest rates. So pretty much you pay your bank to keep your deposits as opposed to the bank paying you interest. It's a very unusual, and it's tied to Japan. I mean, Japan has been stuck in a deflation for a long time. They aspire to get to inflation. So for them, I think the fact that wages have been rising, this is a particular interesting part in Japan called the Shunto period.
Okay.
This is around March, April, when they review all the wages in the economy.
Mm-hmm.
So all the big companies, the All Nippons, the Nissans, have raised wages for the at the highest rate in 3 decades. So that's bound to trigger some inflation. And I think in their wisdom, they're saying, okay, now we can start talking about positive interest rates for the first time in a long time. But an extremely unusual, as it's the only only country in the world that maintains that position. It's part of their yield curve management. Mm-hmm. But very interesting to see Japan as part of the regular flock of nations.
Yeah, combating deflation. You know, you've said there's a period where companies all have to raise salaries. And that is only very specific to Japan, or Eric, I don't know if that is one of a bottom-up approach you can adopt in Kenya. I don't know how, like, they have that much money, and that's, is that what they're trying to achieve, having a negative interest rate?
I think one of the things, you know, we envy Japan is the high savings rate that they have. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reason they're able to do what they do is because they save so much.
Right.
So at the end of the day, at some point, when you have, you know, negative interest rates, you're saying, you know, do something with the money. Don't give us as the bank. And there are, so there's that culture that was already quite ingrained in Japan. And I don't know whether we are there yet. I think for our country, we are in the opposite direction. Government is trying to force us to save more.
They need the money.
So, yes, they need money. And we need to build up all these buckets of savings.
That's true.
You know, there is that interesting movie, Lost in Translation, probably one of the most famous Japanese movies. And, you know, Japan is a country that even our Kenyan leaders love to compare with.
Right.
Whether it's a previous president, Uhuru Kenyatta, looking at the debt levels, our current president looking at taxation.
Right.
These are almost an obsession sometimes you have with Japan.
This is an obsession we need to keep and to maintain, I can tell you.
And you know, exchange rate is also almost at par. Our exchange rate is usually, I think, one point something. It's almost at par.
That's so interesting.
I guess
we're going to Japan. That is the conclusion. For the USA, Ken, we discussed this last week. The Federal Reserve are meeting today. Now, you know what we have to do as the financial forecast. What do you think is going to be the outcome? Also, what is the intended effect for it?
Well, big day today. The 2 days of the Federal Reserve begin today. Obviously, this is the biggest day in terms of global finance because it gives us a clue on where interest rates will go.
Yeah.
I think the overwhelming expectation is that we'll hold interest rates steady.
Mm-hmm.
What markets will be looking for is clues about the future rate cuts.
Right.
Will they happen in Q2, Q3, and just an assessment of where the economy is. Something interesting has been coming up. Over the last weekend, we've seen some labor economists really coming in and disrupting that narrative of a soft landing.
Okay.
They're saying if you look at the labor numbers, actually America is approaching a recession. But that's a small minority. The overwhelming market seems to believe the economy is doing well and interest rates will start coming off possibly Q2, Q3. But that small group of labor economists who are challenging that assumption, these are pretty significant people, people you can't wish away.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting to see how these divergent views will play out moving forward.
So they're going to maintain, reduce?
Yeah, so probably tomorrow definitely they'll maintain
interest
rates. with a view to reduce possibly in Q2, Q3.
Mm-hmm. Eric, is that your view?
Yeah, the same house view. We've also had the same view.
Yeah.
We're thinking the second half is it for both the Fed,
right,
and also potentially also Kenya.
Okay.
We think they might look at what's happening there, and also hopefully our inflation will be closer to the 5% mark.
Okay.
And if they track what's happening globally, then we might see also that trickling down in the local market.
Okay. What have you seen play out in the market every time we have these releases by the Fed, and even the interest cut? You know, just the other day we had CBK raise our interest rates. How have you seen this translate in terms of consumer spending, consumer saving, especially coming from an investment banking perspective?
So really one of the key issues that the administration has been trying to manage, at least the MPC,
right,
in the last increase of the MPC, was the exchange rate.
Mm.
Because the exchange rate was the big topic of the country.
Right.
And so to encourage hot money and to encourage foreign investors to look at our local infrastructure bonds, you raise interest rates.
Right.
And that's partly what drove the strengthening of the shilling,
mm,
as well as other initiatives, especially around the repurchase of the euro bond, which was maturing mid this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And for sure, Ken, we can say the Kenya shilling now is doing very well.
I mean, it's got the appreciation. I mean, yesterday a bank was selling at 129.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be very curious to hear Eric's outlook on the currency.
I think the politicians are taking it the wrong way.
Okay.
Trying to politicize the currency and looking at the currency, because they're almost trying to say the stronger the currency, the better the economy.
Yeah.
But really that shouldn't really be the direction, uh-huh, they're looking at.
Okay.
If you're looking at building up an export-led economy,
right,
you shouldn't let your economy, your currency strengthen too much,
mm,
especially if you are still short of the foreign exchange reserves that you need to keep. It's 4 months, slightly below that.
Mm-hmm.
If I was the central bank, I'd be trying to build up reserves when things are looking good.
Right.
So that we don't end up in a situation where we are in a crisis and we are having to knock on IMF, World Bank, all these doors to try and get more money in. When things are looking good, that's a time to build up buffers. And so my sense is that on the currency front, it's good to control inflation, it's good for our debt, but I think we need to strike the right balance.
Ken, you know, in terms of, as Eric is saying, we need the buffers. And we were discussing, like, are these measures, the way the shilling is continuing to strengthen, was it a way to get people to actually sell their dollars and then maybe get that buffer?
Well, I think the big thing has been on the public debt side.
Right.
I think one of the gains the government has made is by an appreciating shilling, public debt has gone down by about 800 billion.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, because half of our debt is almost more than half is in dollar denominated. So now when you're at this particular range, mm-hmm, obviously fiscal policy in terms of debt management becomes, mm-hmm, a concern. But now the problem is what happens to businesses? Are businesses planning right? You know, I was talking to traders and many have a view that we might go to 115.
Oh.
And I was just asking myself, okay, we are a net importer as a country.
Yes.
Fundamentally, we are a net importer. So all models will tell you as a net importer, you should be able to see a slightly depreciating shilling. So the fact that, you know, we might hit such unusual levels,
mm-hmm,
obviously if you're a business person, let's say you're a car dealer or you're importing food for a restaurant, what planning do you use? Do you use this particular,
mm-hmm,
exchange rate or what you are more familiar with? Because you might use this, then it just
changes.
Yeah, it actually just flips on you. So I think there's a big concern. Obviously, importers are quite happy.
Right.
Exporters are actually quite hit. But I get the sense that there's a bit of an ease and confusion, particularly from a business management and planning perspective? What exactly do you start using?
Okay. I think those are the numbers that Eric and the team at SIB are basically trying to crunch, and they're trying to figure out, okay, which number are we possibly going to be using? So, Eric, we shall see how it all plays out in a few months. Huh?
Yes, it's. I mean, at the beginning of the year, we had this major weakening.
Right.
And our house view was 170 by the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
But we've had, and I think at that time we had estimates of 200, more than 200 exchange rate to the dollar. And now you can see with all the changes, such a short time, and it's barely
time.
One quarter,
right?
And so much has happened to the shilling. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, now you have to stay very flexible.
Yes.
Okay. So let me tell you one thing that happened in Ethiopia today. The Commercial Bank of Ethiopia had a system glitch, and the customers today withdrew more cash than they had in their accounts. Now, what happened later was the bank president said that anyone who's going to return the money is not going to be charged any criminal offense. So we are seeing a lot of internet downtime. I can tell you that it's Ghana are also having an internet downtime. They had it last week. I think it was this month. Singapore are also experiencing a bit of internet downtime because of the geopolitics that playing out at the Mediterranean. So, Ken, is our money also safe?
I mean, that's a very fascinating story from Ethiopia.
Yeah.
The official version is exactly what you've said.
Yeah.
What other media houses reported is some of the students who returned the money were actually arrested.
And you see students.
Actually, the biggest withdrawals were within the universities, and that's where a lot of the police was centered. Just students were, I think, super excited,
very excited
about the ability of getting it out, and the deans of the university, about three universities, had to issue statements. Obviously, the bank chairman came and said that was a very small part of their bank assets, obviously played it down, as you'd expect a bank chairman would play down.
Totally.
But yeah, it points to really, you know, I mean, Ethiopia is a country with a huge population. Any banking disruption can cause enormous uncertainty. So it'll be interesting to see when the numbers are fully reported, how this actually played out.
Right. So I think now our eyes and our ears are all to Ken, to Eric. And today we are looking at Kenya Kwanza's bottom-up transformation, economic transformation agenda. And Eric, I'll start by asking, exactly what is the bottom-up transformation agenda?
Okay, so in terms of just the way they laid it out ahead of the elections, was really to focus on the bottom of the pyramid,
right,
the hustlers, and they had specific industries that they were going to focus on. So there was agriculture, and they said because agriculture, you know, is something that is a common resource in the country, and it had the largest multiplier if they put in effort on it. Then they're also looking at things like healthcare.
Right.
Ensuring that everybody is covered and a comprehensive healthcare scheme, and that's the one, the clip that you played, where there was that threat to encourage the.
Let us share this resource called health.
That's true,
mm-hmm.
So healthcare is a big issue and a big agenda for this administration, and that's why they are pushing it. The other one was housing. And we know again the housing legislation has been signed to really restart it and get it going. It's one of the key pillars, and so they are really trying to push on that.
Yeah.
And then there's the MSMEs, so the small and medium enterprises, because that's the majority of this country.
Right.
If you look at how they're set out, I think the last one is digital, the digital economy.
Yeah.
And again, we've seen the president out and about with, you know, the tap lagay, tap money and make money out of it.
Right.
All these initiatives around the digital space,
yeah.
Think about fiber optic and free Wi-Fi.
Mm.
So these were really the key areas of focus. Of course, they do have the other supporting areas,
yeah.
Like infrastructure, but one of their key promises was that they weren't going to do as much new infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
but they were going to complete the pending projects which were in it. But in a nutshell, those initial five were really the main areas of focus.
And let me tell you, Erica and Ken, as I was preparing for the show, and I had time to read the manifesto, which I did not read, I will be honest. And I went through it, and it is absolutely so very well detailed that as I kept going through each and every, of course, we only picked, there were certain things that were really coming out that time during the elections, but now going into specifics of what it is that they're going to be focusing on, there's actually a whole website. It is called manifestodelivery.go.ke, and it has everything listed as to what the government intends to do. They even have a place where you can track the performance of government and how it is that they're doing. And they had 10 items that they were meant to look into. As Eric has said, there was agriculture. And in agriculture, they have channel monies like 250 billion between 2023 and 2027, transform 2 million poor families from food deficit to a surplus producer. I don't know how that is going to go, and we are going to be tracking how they're doing with the new eTeams conversation that has now come up. Then the number two was MSME economy, as Eric has actually said it, and there is reducing business licenses at 1.5%. Now, I do not know if that has actually been done. Provide 50 million a year, and last week we talked about how there was money from World Bank that has actually been given to microfinances to actually give to the people. Housing and settlement, which is hot on the table, and today our president assented to the affordable housing law, so it's paving way for the reinstatement of housing levy. It's painful, guys. So there's housing and settlement, there's healthcare, again what we have just played today, provide national health insurance fund coverage for all Kenyans, employment of over 20,000 healthcare workers. I know right now the conversation that is out there is last week the doctors were meant to go on strike. I think they're still in deliberations. So some of all this, I think they're there. There's a digital and creative economy, the fibers, and create a regional hub, infrastructure, as Eric said, just maintaining the roads that are there right now. Environment and climate change, we discussed green energy and carbon credits.
Carbon
credits. There's education, bridge the teacher shortage gap, get an exam-based system that is actually checking on academic progression, and introduce alternative entry criteria. I think that started from the previous regime. There's gender, the two-thirds gender rule, provide free sanitary towels, and I think we've been seeing all this. There were billboards that this MP is actually having a campaign to have sanitary towels. And then finally, there is governance. Transfer all functionalities constitutionally, appoint all judges nominated by the JSE, timely and predictable transfer of shareable revenue to counties. Of course, that was also being discussed the other day. There's security services and people and disabilities. So when I was going through that manifesto, what shocked me and what came to realization is they're actually working towards all that. Like everything that you open the newspaper today to read, when you're listening to the regulations and the laws, they're all geared towards what is happening in the manifesto. And I know we're about to go into the break. One thing I want to ask is, one, is it working? And if at all you go through all that, the government looks like it's actually delivering on its promise. But of course, there are some areas where it's hurting. But also, is it, did they just come up with, is it new? Has it been done before? Or it is something that has always been there, just that now it's being firmed up? Because most of the items we can see were there from the previous government. So I don't know, Ken, did you have time to go through the manifesto?
You know, I'm so glad you've given us a very good summary, because most Kenyans don't have time to read these manifestos.
Totally.
In fact, the 2022 election was just collapse into a hustler versus dynasty narrative, and people didn't go through it. I mean, if you remember the debate, the Azimio candidate did not show up,
for
the debate. So there was no really opportunity to interrogate. And the people who have access to the websites, the manifesto delivery, I mean, that's a small percentage in the cities.
Yeah.
I think what they did well is on selling the vision.
Right.
I think was in the how part. I think very few people anticipated that their pay slips would be the source of that transformation.
Yeah.
And I think what you read in the papers now is a reaction.
No, it is, yes.
Because, you know, the bulwark of where the votes came from are business counties, where people run businesses. So I don't think people had expected that their businesses would...
I'm going to get that much of an impact. Direct injection.
And that's why we are today.
And we shall take a break and go into the news. It is now 7 o'clock. Welcome back. It is Tuesday, and you know what happens every Tuesday. This is the Financial Forecast, a show that seeks to delve into matters affecting our economy. If you're just joining us, don't worry, you're not late. You can catch the first half of the show by listening to us online, where you get your podcasts from, Capital FM SoundCloud page. You are with me, Nyambura Ndongo, alongside Ken Gishinga, Chief Economist, Mentoria Economics. And today we do have a guest with us, Eric Musau, Executive Director, Research and Sustainable Finance at SIB. That is Standard Investment Bank, right, Eric?
Yes, it is.
Yes. And today we are discussing Kenya Kwanza's bottom-up economic transformation agenda. And we began the show earlier by listening to a clip that our president today giving us a request, an impolite request. And I think what was happening today is SHIF needs to be coming into effect. But one thing I know that came into effect today is the housing levy, which was actually signed into law. And we're anticipating, again, our payslips are going to be hurting very much. So before we went for our break, we were discussing the manifesto that Kenya Kwanza had, and it was absolutely surprising to me at how detailed and very measurable. You know, when they say these are smart targets, these are absolutely really smart targets. Like down to the T, the amount of money and all these things. But my question for you, Eric, is, and we have discussed, I think, Ken, last week we discussed the US president talking about how clearly their bottom-up, middle-out is actually working. We had the two sessions in China, and you say that is a real bottom-up where they actually check what is really happening to the mwananchi down there. For us, Eric, is as I was going through the manifesto, and I think I've had time to look at, it was the 2020, there's the economic outlook that is normally 5 years, and then there's a medium term and all that. Mm. It is not new. It carries from one government to another, and it spans 15 years, 10 years. So is this bottom-up transformational agenda new? Is it new, or are we picking up from past governments?
Yeah, it's a good observation. And remember, most of the planning agenda also borrows significantly under Vision 2030.
Yes,
and that's where it's broken down to medium-term expenditure framework, right, and you know, to try and implement all those targets to achieve that bigger vision.
Yeah.
But I think from a political standpoint, and usually this quote that politicians campaign in poetry and govern in prose.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what this administration did.
Yeah.
They campaigned very well. On the execution bit, that's why they have to put all these, what you can say, maybe in a way at threats.
Yeah.
And it's not just on the healthcare bill that they have a bit
that's
of nudging.
Strong.
We've seen a bit of nudging on the affordable housing to get people to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen a bit of nudging when Kenyans were speculating against the currency and they were being told you're going to lose money.
So you need to.
I think we've seen other cases also. Mambo ni matatu.
Yes.
Remember with litigation
yes.
around the sugar sector.
Yeah.
So obviously the implementation is always very challenging.
Yeah.
And in fact, what has surprised us was how quickly this administration has tried to pack through, you know, a lot of very difficult political decisions very early on in their campaign, very early on in the administration, because obviously the closer you get to 2027, it will be election time, and you'll not have a good opportunity to pack difficult decisions.
Mm-hmm.
Remember the fuel tax. The previous administration, at that time Uhuru as the president, had tried to bring in the tax on fuel to 16%. And Parliament refused, and he had to write back to Parliament with the 8%.
Right.
So obviously this administration so pushed it back to the 16%, which had already been planned.
Right.
There was the housing initiatives, which remember there was the Big Four agenda, and housing was one of the agenda.
Yes.
But it was really never pushed through because of all the debates and back and forth of the time. Healthcare as well was a discussion point.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, we needed to make additional contributions to really enable this element, which is enshrined in the Constitution.
Yeah.
And also on pension contributions, trying to increase the pension contributions that go to the National Social Security Fund.
Mm.
So there's been quite a number of initiatives, but what really matters is really how well the administration decides, okay, we're going to put in the political capital or political pain to get these measures done.
Right.
Because also that's where you're going to be able to gain the fruits. You can't build an economy without savings. So from where I stand, it's difficult decisions that had to be made.
Right.
I think even some of the politicians, don't blame yourself, you didn't read the manifesto. even the Kenya Kwanza's own
right.
MPs,
yeah.
I think at some point had to be called to State House
to be told
what the policy measures
right.
are, because I think they seemed surprised when some of the measures were being implemented.
Right.
And they were wondering, what is this? And you know, and it seems like the president had all the intentions of going through with it. So,
You know, Eric, just amazing listening to that. From my perspective, when I think about the 2022 elections, I thought it was an incredible elections because it was an economic argument that was presented to Kenyans. And like almost all the previous elections in Kenya, which were heavily ethnicized.
Right.
The 2022 was a bit unique.
Mm-hmm.
It was really about the economy, about how do we get young people back to jobs And for me, I think that was a turning point in terms of our politics. And I think that is where Kenya Kwanza read that mood very well.
Mm-hmm.
That the argument this time will not be about kingpins,
yeah.
but it'll be about who has a better manifesto. And the manifesto Nyambura just read tells you
yep.
How they saw that in mm-hmm. advance. Do you find it disappointing that based on such a fantastic reading of what would work,
yeah.
we'd end up with a government that's very bloated
mm-hmm.
and crowds out the private sector? Because you'd imagine this should be the most pro-business. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about the Kibaki as having very low interest rates,
mm-hmm.
Banks falling over themselves to lend people. But what we have today is, you know, infrastructure bonds at 18%. It's euro bonds at double digits. So you have money that should be going to the private sector where jobs are really created.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost being sucked into government. So you have actually the most bloated government. Do you find that ironical?
I think when you look through the different administrations, and maybe let me start the Moi regime, which
yeah.
I experienced part of that.
Mm-hmm.
Moi at that time, there was issues around sanctions, the economy wasn't doing well, you didn't have foreign investment into the economy. And then you had this switch to the Kibaki regime. And I remember that time when, because I was just starting off buying shares in the market, regardless of the quality of company, all the shares were just literally just going up because of the confidence that that Kibaki inspired. It wasn't because he did anything specific. I think people had expected a lot more messier transition for the country.
Aww.
So that transition, just by it happening in a smooth way, was really critical in building confidence. And so we saw those valuation of assets going up. But I think also Kibaki enjoyed a period in the global economy when interest rates were really low.
Okay.
So Kibaki was able to borrow at low interest rates and, you know, also money from foreign investors, because our market did not have foreign investors. Any shilling that was coming in was new money into the economy. So as an economy, we could see a lot of positivity. He did invest in infrastructure, but not as much. He started it off, but I think when you think about it, the largest infrastructure project he did was really the Thika Expressway.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it was barely like 30 billion. Come to the Uhuru administration, and they started the effort now was to try and doing big projects. So we saw the SGR, I think 400, if you look at it total, 600 billion. So you can see relative to the other projects that was done by Kibaki, the size of projects was way bigger. The roads, not only were the roads being done in Nairobi, they're also being done across in far-flung areas, trying to go through to Turkana, Isiolo, opening up across the entire country.
Mm.
And so that, of course, brought its own challenges. And then remember the new constitution brought in the county governments. So there's also money that goes to the county governments. So at that point now, Uhuru built up the debt position. There were a lot more bigger size of government.
Right.
But I think at that period, the global economy was still favorable to us. Interest rates were favorable. That's why we tapped into the euro bond. Interest rates were favorable. So we were able to attract that capital. But towards the end of that administration, when you think about the subsidies which had been introduced after COVID, we did not raise our tax revenues as quickly as we should have. We have a very big informal economy.
Yeah.
Now, that was what was handed over to the Ruto administration. And at that point now, you know, they need to figure out how we're going to pay back these debts. The Eurobond is something that we've mentioned. Now it's time to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, what they did is to refinance, but you're refinancing it at a much higher interest rate than we did the previous time. Global interest rates have also gone up. Maybe LIBOR during the Uhuru administration was maybe at 0.25 or 0.5%. Now we are at 5% plus. the SOFR, the benchmark rate that prices loans. So, the, and then of course you still have the big government, mm-hmm. as we all have, but it's really time now to collect money to repay debt or get more loans, which come at expensive debt, and also to do the real hard work of building our economy. Because I think as an economy, we ended up being too import-oriented. And, you know, of course, we remember during Kibaki's times, you have the borders, a lot of importation. And during the Uhuru regime, there was an idea of trying to add a bit more value into what is done locally. And the Ruto administration is also trying to focus on agriculture, having as much value chains as possible done mm-hmm. within the country. Of course, they have introduced these export promotion taxes, which are really import taxes in a way. But the idea is to have as much done within the country in order to create jobs. But whether they've succeeded, I think it's too early to say. But I would say they're on the right track.
Mm-hmm.
Creating jobs is not easy. It involves painful decisions. If you need to lower interest rates, now you see the with the rates where they are, obviously it's a big challenge to business. Government, both national and county governments, have built up a huge portfolio of unpaid debt.
Yep.
We call it pending bills. Mm-hmm. But really these are businesses which are hurting out there.
Yeah.
So there's obviously a lot of work that needs to be go there. And if we need to build this, if we talk about the Japanese saving, we also need to build our own saving pools.
Right.
And that's the National Social Security Fund, the Public Sector Superannuation Fund, and all these funds to be able to do a lot more of our own work, even as we tap into the global capital and try and, you know, kind of make income from exports or also services industries, by the way, is also very critical.
Mm-hmm.
Remember these initiatives that there's a lot of fun being made of. But really it's very critical. The services industry has been one of the key growth drivers over the last couple of years.
That's true.
And technology is really a critical one. So I would say they're moving the right direction. It was never going to be easy to do this difficult decisions. But, you know, I'm even surprised they've really packed a lot of these decisions within a very short time. Politically, it's usually very, very tough for politicians because they want to give politicians an easier time.
You know, Eric, it's like you're preempting, because the next question I have for you is, where would you rate? But, Ken, where would you rate the government so far? What rate would you give them? And you know, let me tell you, the interesting conversation we've been having is, I think we've been at it for, you know, as Eric is saying, the government came in and they have done so much, like there's so much everywhere. We are thinking we are 5 years in, like we just voted just last year but one, and it feels like it's been years of this regime and what they are doing, and like we can really feel their impact. What would you rate them?
I mean, the fact, Nyambura, that we enjoy peace and stability,
mm-hmm.
We can't take that for granted.
Totally.
Particularly being in Africa,
mm-hmm.
where you have instability of coups.
Okay.
So the fact that, you know, we can go home to work,
right.
We can go home and back to work,
mm-hmm.
Lends credence to the fact that law and order is there.
Yeah.
So there has to be some credit. That said, I think the plight of business is quite tough. You look at non-performing loans, it gives you a good indication.
Mm-hmm.
Every businessman will tell you there are a bit of, there's a cash crunch of sorts.
Right.
So I think I'll just give them a 5. I think I'll just give them a 5 out of 10. Yeah.
5 out of 10.
Yes. How about you, Eric?
Eric, how would you rate the government?
I'd be a little bit more optimistic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would give them a 7 out of 10.
Oh, wow.
I think some of the policy measures will be a little bit more long-lasting.
Mm-hmm.
I hope they succeed in really building up this bottom,
mm-hmm.
because that's really where the big market is going to be.
Yeah.
If you can formalize the informal sector, grow this 90% of people who are not really paying any tax and turn them into taxpayers. It's very, very politically painful or difficult, but if you're able to transform that, it will ensure that the 10% who are shouldering the burden currently for the rest of the population on roads, on taxes, maybe that burden can ease off at some point.
Right, and I don't know how they're going to do it. I mean, I think the question everyone is still asking is the how, but why would you give them 7 out of 10, which are the, I mean, the key pillars that they have focused on. You had said agriculture, there's the MSMEs, there's the digital transformation, housing, levy, and healthcare. Why would you give them a 7? What have they done correctly in those areas?
Yeah, so if you look at, for example, the digital economy, which is something that I like a lot, they've actually started rolling out the 25,000 free Wi-Fi hotspots. Remember, the way it was campaigned was that you're not going to need to buy any airtime. But really, this is really free Wi-Fi hotspots.
Yeah.
Of course, you need affordable SIM card, affordable phone. I think that they launched something, an affordable phone with Safaricom and some providers to try and have the smartphones in the hands of the citizens. So, and then there's a fiber optic to try and have fiber optic across the country.
Yeah.
And then there's the Jitume centers where, you know, if you are an individual, you've studied and you want to do jobs, you can go in there, you can study, you can go, you can get jobs online,
right,
and maybe at some point you exit. But of course, it's Jitume, you would need to go there literally and find out. So if you look at the digital component, you can actually see that they're trying to do that.
Did I see a place where there's to be manufacturing of phones?
Yes. They
as well, right?
Yeah, they're doing it in, I think, Athi River, Machakos County.
Yeah.
And it's mostly assembling, but it's assembling from the very tiniest part.
Okay.
And obviously, hopefully, if it all works out, they can do a second phase or add more shifts. So I guess the digital pillar is kind of working.
I can tell you, Ken, this manifesto is actually being worked on. Eh? Seriously, my friend.
We saw, of course, there's the affordable housing, which they are trying to push the legislative agenda because they need to raise the money. Where are they going to get the money? They have the land. They need a bit of kicker. So they're trying to, they can't build the houses they need to build if they don't have enough money. So that's one of the key issues.
Ken, you know, every time the housing levy comes up in the housing fund, and it is at the backdrop of we want to create employment, and how do you tie that we are creating employment by building more houses, by taxing people who are not going to get those houses, who also do not have that money, but at the same time, the people you're meant to be growing, or the people now who are going to be probably building the houses, are also meant to be taxed? Like, make it make sense.
That's at the heart of the problem, Nyambura.
Yeah.
I think the economic philosophy informing the bottom-up transformation model in Kenya is a bit faulty. Unemployment is a function of monetary policy.
Right.
Almost every Tuesday we discuss what's happening on monetary policy.
Mm-hmm.
The Fed today will be looking at monetary policy from an unemployment perspective.
Right.
So it's not that you come up with projects to create people. You come up with a monetary policy that looks at interest rates, and you reduce interest rates for everybody, not just for hustlers or for particular groups, but you reduce interest rates for everybody, and everybody wants to do business, is able to do business. So I think those are the fundamental things. And I was expecting with the Council of Economic Advisors that you would go one notch beyond the previous leaders, maybe who didn't have the benefit of a Council of Advisors, who would say, you know, unemployment, first of all, we need to track unemployment numbers.
Yeah.
Across the board,
right.
Every first Friday of the month, let's come up with this number so we can say we are making good progress mm-hmm. or we are not.
Mm-hmm.
It's so sad when we talk about how the economy is doing. We look at things such as Eurobond subscriptions. We look at so many other indicators, except the one indicator that really matters.
Employment.
Are we creating jobs?
Mm-hmm.
And if you are creating, what counties,
right.
what industries? Mm-hmm. So I would have expected the first 1 year to be able to lay a framework on what does success look like
mm-hmm.
for every administration that comes in future. This will be the metric.
Right.
It will be an employment.
Mm.
We'll measure it this way. And now citizens will be able to judge the economy in an apolitical way. So we've not been given that benefit. The next thing is on the tax policy. We always talk about the Laffer curve.
Right.
And I'm sure Eric understands mm-hmm. the Laffer curve. If you overtax people, they change, look for cheaper substitutes.
Now it's actually happening.
Yeah. So right now, you know, you'll go on the streets and you didn't find as many cars as possible.
Yeah.
Because people are working from home
mm-hmm.
or looking for cheaper substitutes. So the taxes you'd have expected to collect, actually much less.
Right.
So they operate under this assumption that the more taxation you do, the higher
yeah.
the revenue.
Yeah.
Again, this is where economic experts would have come and say, actually, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, that curve is not going to work.
When you have heavy consumption taxes, people just look for cheaper
mm-hmm.
substitutes. So for me, it's the basic economic framework that for me it's lacking, and for me it speaks to, you know, maybe lack of preparation,
right.
maybe, but it's hard for me to understand because, you know, previous presidents didn't have such elaborate
yeah.
advisory framework. So I've expected this to be the framework that talks about our fiscal policy. Is it tax to GDP? Is that what counts? Or is it tax to is it debt service
right.
to tax revenue?
Right.
Those are I was expecting far more sophisticated arguments, and we haven't had that. And for me, that for me I think is really the underwhelming part of this particular type of transformation.
Right, Eric. You know, I would expect agriculture being such a very key and a very heavy component in our economy. If at all you grow agriculture, I can tell you for sure, the amount of employment you're going to be giving, especially those youth, and I mean, if at all there is so much work to be done in the farms, trust me, even I will be thinking, do I really need this 8 to 5 if at all I can actually be at home doing farming and getting all this produce and I can export my produce or I can even sell it. How do you think the Kenya Kwanza is actually working in terms of agriculture?
Yeah, and maybe also just to mention actually what Ken has mentioned on the unemployment numbers.
Mm-hmm.
We really don't have proper data, and a lot of it is estimates, but also, you know, we need to register people, and that's why when you look at some of the initiatives out there, like either you belong to a professional association,
yeah.
so that at the end of the day, you can register people and kind of have tangible numbers about the employment situation. But coming to agriculture, I think there's work to be done.
Right.
Obviously, last year the administration can argue that they did well because, from a production standpoint, mm-hmm. I think apart from rice, we saw a lot of a significant increase in the production
right.
of various items, including maize.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the maize was a standout performer given the debate around the cost of maize, and that they attributed that to the fertilizer subsidy scheme. But I think they were also lucky they brought the fertilizer on time and it rained well. Because I remember the previous administration, there was a time the fertilizer was delayed.
Yeah.
So obviously, if it delays, that's an issue. And this year, again, we're seeing a bit of delay on the fertilizer side. So that may have an impact on yields. But they're also talking about different supply chains. There was cotton,
mm-hmm.
there was milk, there's leather. And all those are a lot of work. Also, they were trying to look at cooking oil. Of course, it ended up being kind of a scandal
right.
on its own. But really, the idea was to try and have a lot of that grown locally
yeah.
and try and either plant those crops so that in 5 years when they start maturing, then you can have processing and kind of save all this foreign exchange that we send out there. So there's a bit of work, and I think agriculture is really a big challenge. Fertilizer is something that they've done, but that's really not enough. They mm-hmm. they need to look at all those different crops. There's the county aggregation schemes that they've tried to set up right. as well. And again, they're kind of anchored around value addition of agriculture products. So obviously, it's a bit too early, but at least the launching has happened on various counties.
Mm-hmm. So 7 out of 10... Three out of ten. I'm sure. Well, something is working for sure, and most of the things are not working. But I think we have already seen they're coming against such a very volatile economic, even globally. So much is happening, you know, geopolitics and inflation. Where can we see it going in the next, like, 5 years?
On my side, I'm generally slightly positive,
yeah.
Given the measures which have been taken so far.
Right.
I think overall we're in the right direction.
Okay.
We still need a bit of work, but
I think
but
you're the only
overall
Kenyan
we
who thinks
despite the pain on my payslip.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you know, that's only 10 or 20% of Kenyans. So
right.
So realistically, yeah. If it's to work for the entire country,
yeah.
then a lot
it
of the initiatives that we are looking at need to work in a wider scale.
Okay. Ken, you can as well give us your parting shot. I can see our time is far much more.
I think we need a fundamental turnaround,
yeah.
Nyambura. I think mm-hmm. Kenyans are suffering, our businesses are hurting. We just have to take a paper like this
mm-hmm.
and look at how many auction pages
yeah.
are in the newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, even auctioneers have said, you are tired.
Please have, so much work.
Have private treaties. There's nobody
even
to
the
buy
these. Auctioneers are not getting in. Okay, I get you.
They're saying, do a private
nobody,
treaty.
Yeah.
There's nobody. So it tells you that people are between a rock and a hard place,
mm-hmm.
and we badly need a small stimulus
right.
into this economy.
Mm-hmm.
We need to start getting people into jobs. We need to start measuring how many people are getting jobs.
Right.
So it's as you say, it's still early days.
Yeah.
But for me, I wonder how long we can continue the current mm-hmm. Situation.
Right. And... thank you, Eric. Thank you, Ken. I think one thing I'm going to be putting a very keen eye on is they even have a tracker for us on that website, guys. So I will be there and we shall be tracking all this. Thank you so much for a wonderful show. And we come to the end of Financial Forecast. I just don't understand where time goes, but yes, it is 7:37. Remember, you can get all this and more information, in-depth and economic insights by reaching out to info@mentoria.co.ke. Data analysis, forecasting, which Ken is a sir to do. If you missed bits of the show, if at all you've missed any other previous episode, you can catch up on this episode and every other episode by listening to or getting to Capital FM SoundCloud page. And anywhere you actually get your podcast from. So for us, it is a good evening. Keep checking. Bottom up is actually in action. It is working. And it is very, very well detailed. Yeah, as we internalize all that, it is time to get hyped up with Wanjera L. For us, it is have a very lovely bottom up kind of week and weekend. Bye.